Hello, everyone. This is Pete Winarski, and welcome once again to the Institute of Success and Goal Achievement. This is our weekly call. It happens every Friday at this time. Thank you for joining us today. I see some webcasters. Hello. And the folks on the phone, hello to you as well. And I'm very excited today. If you were on the phone for the last 5 minutes right before we got started, you probably heard Deb and I bantering back and forth a little bit. I'm happy to be home. I'm home. I was in Europe, in France, the last couple weeks, and I'm actually heading back for a few more after a very fun, busy wedding weekend. And so I'm excited about that. But I'm also very excited about the next hour because, Deb, I know you're going to have a good time, and we're going to roll.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
So for those of you who don't know and have not met Deb Sandella, Deb is really wonderful, and I'm going to give you a brief description, and then, you know, Deb, I'm going to let you fill in the blanks of who exactly you are, and of course we'll talk about your story a little bit. But what we do every week at iSaga with the guest is we talk to them about not just their area of expertise, but a little bit about who they are and what their success story is, because there's a lot that we can learn as individuals about ourselves that we can accelerate whatever our journey is by listening to what other people have done. So we want to build some of that in. But Deb, we've described you today as somewhat of an intuition expert. And, you know, I know you do an awful lot with meditation, and it's been fantastic working with you during the time that we have. And I've really accelerated, you know, my ability to actually meditate and understand the process and feel like I'm getting something out of it, which was not the case beforehand. So, and maybe that's normal, but I'm really, really pleased with what I've learned from you, and I imagine we'll learn even more today.
Great. Yeah,
why don't you tell us a little bit, just my description of you as an intuition expert and meditation expert is probably rather incomplete. Do you want to give us a little little bio for yourself?
Sure. In fact, it kind of takes me, I guess, into my story in that, well, I am from Denver, Colorado, and I've lived here for almost 30 years. I'm married, and I have two children. One, it's hard to call them children anymore. One is 24 and on his own in Washington, D.C., and I have a daughter in high school, so we just had the prom, after prom party at our house last weekend. So,
all right.
So it's busy around here. Professionally, I was a psychotherapist in a private practice and also taught as a university professor, was a middle manager in a mental health center for about 25 years. I did all of those things. And then, you know, the very turning point in my career happened in 1995 when I got a call in the middle of the night from my brother that my dad had had a cardiac arrest, that he was in ICU, and that his blood pressure wasn't holding, and that the nurses wanted us to sign a no-resuscitate agreement because they did not think he was going to make it through the night. And so this was, of course, very upsetting, and I had this immediate intuitive response, and I am a nurse. My first degree is in nursing. And I said no. I was so furious that that they would ask me to let him go. It was as if, you know, you have no idea what you're asking here, who this person is. And so as I hung up the phone and I began to walk back to bed, I had this immediate vision in my mind of seeing my dad walk away towards a huge light. And as I saw him walking away, all of a sudden, I was furious in this vision. And I started to yell at him how angry I was. I wasn't ready for him to go. And I was just furious. And then all of a sudden, I'll never forget it, he just turned very slowly around. And as I saw his face, his face had this look of peace that I had never seen and have really never seen since. In real life, and he said, "Oh, I didn't know you felt that way." And then all of a sudden, all my anger just kind of drained out of me, just like I was a wet noodle. And, you know, and then the vision disappeared. And I kept holding that vision all the rest of the night, and I flew out the next morning, you know, at 5 a.m. I arrived to the hospital, and they said, in the middle of the night, his blood pressure started to hold.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad survived. And so that was my very first awakening to the power of the intuitive mind and the
wow.
power of imagery within the mind that totally changed the course of my personal and professional life, I would say. So it's been an interesting journey.
Well, and that's, you know, if there's anything that really jolts you in a particular direction, your story is a jolt.
Uh-huh. Yes, that's right. Yeah, it was, and that's one of the things, if we're talking about intuition, one of the things that's so easy to override intuition is that it just arrives out of the blue.
Mm.
Without any thinking, without analysis, it just arrives. And when it first arrives, it's very neutral. So that I was not having any kind of conscious thoughts about my dad. I was really feeling great anger at the time and grief about what was going on. So this vision came all of its own accord. It's like some people call it a download.
Mm-hmm.
So that it has its own quality of just arriving. And that's why it's really easy for us sometimes to override intuitive information that arrives, because it's not related to anything logical. It's frequently illogical, and sometimes it's really even outside of any kind of emotional feeling about it. And yet, it is, when we follow it, it is so important and so vital. I know later on, a couple years after that, my husband was going through a career change. He was about to turn 50 and decided he wanted to be in charge of his midlife crisis.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I don't know if any of your listeners can relate to that. And so we ended up following his intuition to take a personal sabbatical out of the country for almost a year. Took our 13-year-old and our 6-year-old with us. And again, it totally changed our lives by following that intuition. And it was one of those things that you just have no idea what's going to happen, but there was an awakening, I think, within each of us about new aspects of ourselves that we hadn't known before, because we were unplugged from everything familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we came back, and so one of the things that was important for me is I had been a psychotherapist for 25 years, and I realized while I was in Australia that I had been more in touch with my clients' feelings than my own.
Oh,
which
right.
was quite an awakening. So that this whole time in Australia, almost a year, was really an experience of self-discovery. That again influenced me when I came back, so that the decisions I made after that were very different than I would have expected to make when I decided to go to Australia. A little tidbit on the side is when we came back from Australia, we found out that our investments had actually earned more money for us while we were over there playing than if we had stayed here in our jobs.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so it was like this whole affirmation about following intuition and trusting, stepping out into the unknown, and allowing things to happen that you never would believe could happen.
Right. I'm sure you could tell us story after story after story about, you know, examples for you and for clients and other people that you've worked with or know of. And we'll definitely build in time in the second half of the call, because I do want to hear lots of these, because I, from my experience, it really comes to life. You can hear somebody say, well, here's what you should do and here's how you should do it, and then until you add the story on top of it, that's where it really comes to life, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's
that's
cover
right.
off a couple more things about your personal story, and then let's really dive into, you know, the whole intuition theme.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the ideas about the Institute of Success and Goal Achievement, you know, the iSAGA, mantra here is, what is success? And every person really has a unique definition of success. What's yours?
I think for me in my course, that what has evolved as being what is successful for me is when I am able to stay in love with life, kind of regardless of what is going on around me, whatever kind of inner struggles I might have or outer challenges, that if I can really stay connected with being in the essence of being alive and appreciating and grateful for that, then for me that's successful.
Right. Fairly simple and straightforward, isn't
it? Yeah, it's very simple. And you know what happens is it has become a measurement for me. It's like a barometer. So it's like if I'm in that place of feeling alive and I'm flourishing, then I know I'm on track. And if I'm feeling drained and fatigued, I'm not wanting to do what it is that's on my plate, then I know that I'm needing to make an adjustment. And
right.
What has happened is that it's encouraged me to keep following my own guidance, my own intuitive guidance. And that more and more and more over the years, then I've been narrowing in to what is that guidance and then really obeying it. And the word obey seems very strong. When it first came to me during meditation that it is obedience to our intuition, I thought, oh my goodness, that's a strange word. But it is obedience because we may not have a logical or an emotional reason why we're doing this, but we just know that this is the direction we're being called, and it may be a risky direction. And so that knowing, trusting that knowing is so important.
Well, if I can share a story real quick.
Absolutely. I would love that, Pete.
Well, this was, very real, very recent. And, yesterday as I was leaving France, actually the night before, I learned through one of the French guys at the client site, he just mentioned, oh, by the way, I just heard that Air France is striking, and usually when that happens, everybody follows suit really quick, and so there was concern about the ability to get back to Paris, take my flight back to the U.S., because the trains and the planes, many of them, would not go, and it's a more common occurrence, I guess, than it needs to be, but they're used to it. It happens, and I quickly said, oh, boy, what are my options here? And I quickly picked up the phone and called my travel person back here who was great, and we ended up deciding it's roughly a 6 hours drive or so to get to Paris, plus whatever traffic would have been created as a result of this. And so I found a hotel that I booked myself into prior to leaving, that would have been halfway, and so I've got half a tank of gas, and I was starting to drive, and there it was, that little bing, hey Pete, go get gas. But it was interesting because there was a gas station immediately where I was when I, that I just passed, and the message was not to go to that one. The message was go to the one that's near the hotel that you checked out of this morning. And so I did. Now, this was, maybe 7 o'clock at night, and a lot of businesses in France are closed early. And this particular one, many of the gas stations are open 24 hours because you can use your credit card there, but there's no person in the booth to help you. And so first thing is, of course, the little display is completely in French, with your instructions on, insert
right.
your card, pull your card out, that kind of thing. And so I knew enough to sort of figure out what to do, but I clearly wasn't doing something right because it wasn't accepting my credit card. And so I literally went to the guy on the other side who was pumping gas in his car, and with what little French I knew, I asked him for some help. He did not really speak English. He actually spoke more than he gave himself credit for. And here's what basically transpired. We tried every single credit card that I had in my wallet. None of them would work. And there's a little chip in a lot of the credit cards now, and these gas pumps were looking for the credit cards with the chips in order to use it because it's an extra security feature. And I guess they have them over there, maybe more advanced than we have here, certainly than I had in my wallet. Would you know that as it turned out, because I had plenty of cash, this guy completely volunteered to use his credit card, and then I just paid him money.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, man, would that happen in my own hometown?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, and I'm not sure it would.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy was happy to help out, and we had a little bit of conversation while we were trying to figure this all out. And I honestly never had at the point during this maybe 15 minutes, wasn't confident that it would work out. But boy, was I confused following the steps. But to hear the little message to go to that particular gas station because it was the one that I was closer to and more familiar with. And then I ended up at the pump next to the guy who was happy to pull his own credit card out of his own pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Was amazing. And had I not, because I had a half a tank of gas when I went there, but had I not filled the tank, I might have been in a little bit of trouble because I had to drive all the way to Paris.
Right. Yeah, it's those little times of hearing that voice that we, it makes the difference whether life goes easily or not. I know I had a neighbor one time tell me how he had been at a stoplight, and all of a sudden he just, he heard this little voice say, wait, because the light had turned to green, and it said, wait. And so, and he did, it was kind of like he just did, and all of a sudden this car came zooming through the intersection and went through a red light, and if he had gone when the light had turned green, he would have been hit.
Right.
And so it's those little moments that if we obey without having any idea why, that we have a life that flows easily and quite magically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Boy, let's have more stories. Before we do,
I love hearing all the stories.
Yeah.
So
well, you shared in your intro, some of your career decisions, the story about the call with your dad and the story about your husband. And the change that he had and the fact that you went down to Australia. Are there any other real important moments, tipping points, or decisions that you made during your career that really just accelerated things forward for you?
Yes. Well, it's interesting. I thought that was a great question, that you'd given me ahead of time. It's like, are there any tipping points? And it made me realize that actually I probably have a significant tipping point about every 3 years.
Mm.
And particularly because I've been living in an intuitive way of following that inner pull or that inner guidance, that inner call for so long, that what happens is those tipping points start coming more and more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
So that then, you're accelerating in your progress. Or at least that's what I've experienced, and I've seen that happen for others. And so I'll just share a few as I realize they're numerous. But there are a few. One was that when I came back from Australia, when we went to Australia, I thought that I closed my psychotherapy practice for the year, and I thought when I came back I would just reopen it.
Right.
And when I came back, what happened was I first of all, I had a call come in from an ex-client who knew that it was about the time for me to start my practice back again. And I had this call with her, and I went and hung up the phone. And when I came off of that call, once again, I had this intuition. And there was this flash across my mind, if you go back to doing what you've done, you'll get sick. And it was like, whoa, where did that come from?
Mm.
But it was an intuition. So is there any logic? Is there any analysis? Is there any guarantee? No. I just had to decide to go with it. And at that point, I made it a decision to permanently close my psychotherapy practice, even though it had been very successful for, 25 years.
Right.
And in that decision, I opened up this whole new realm that has taken me out of that box, that particular box,
mm-hmm.
into the unknown, into intuition, into exploring new possibilities of how change can happen more quickly and more permanently. And so that has just been so exciting. So that was a very important decision. Another decision that I made that I think was extremely important was to begin working with Jack Canfield.
Mm-hmm.
And this is about 4 or 5 years ago. And once again, it was all intuitive because this is how I've been making decisions for a while. So I had received a flyer about a workshop that Jack was giving in Las Vegas. And when I meditated, I kept getting this message. And I mean, I received lots of flyers about lots of workshops, so it's not like the only one on my desk.
Right.
And I'm in meditation, and all of a sudden this little voice says, you're supposed to go to that workshop. And so I ask in my mind why, and the answer is, you'll see. So once again, it's not, you know, it's again, there's no specific answers, but it is a call, it is an urging. And so I went, and that has been so profitable. Jack has been just the most marvelous mentor for me, and I have learned so much. I'm now working on his staff. Which you also are going to join us, Pete.
Yes, I'm very excited.
I'm excited about
excited
that.
For this
That's
year.
Great.
Yeah.
And over the last couple of years, we have been creating together a project that I'm hoping will be out in the market by the end of August. That is a product that combines his expansive knowledge of success along with my understanding of intuition, so that this is a product that will help people be able to access their own intuition and use it to dissolve blocks to their success, and also help them rehearse situations that allow them to feel success, for the future. So
right.
That is a very significant kind of decision. And then the last one that I'll share is the decision to take the method that I've been creating over the last 10 years, like after I left my psychotherapy practice. I began playing in the field of intuition, and over the last 10 years have been combining that with my psychotherapy expertise and created a method that allows us to use intuition very intentionally to dissolve blocks, to heal whatever might be creating self-sabotaging behavior, and then also to allow us to feel a much deeper sense of our own wholeness and our own self-confidence. And so that has been really fun. And the big decision that has really expanded that is when I decided to start teaching other therapists, other coaches, other healers how to use this method with others, with their clients.
Right.
So at first it was, like my husband said when I started to do this, he goes, how can you teach this? Isn't this just you? Because there's a very intuitive piece to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wasn't sure. So it was a real experiment to see, can I teach this? Can I really, put it down on paper and realize what the specific skills are and teach it to people? And so I found out that, yes, I can, and that my students are now getting great results with their clients. And that has just been so wonderful for me, because I can now see how I can contribute to the world in this bigger way without wearing myself out.
Right.
So it's been wonderful. I'm sure you probably have some of those kind of decisions that you've made as well.
Many.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Many. In fact, this trip, this client engagement in France, was one of them. And that was, just right place, right time to say yes to 3 months away with the family back here. Under normal circumstances, I would probably not have said yes to that. But for some reason, all of the signals said that I should. Mm-hmm. And we worked out and figured out how to do that. And the family will come over for a while. My wife and the two boys will actually be in Europe. I'll commute back to them in England, where they'll be playing with their cousins and my brother. My brother and his wife is English. And so it will work.
Wonderful.
I didn't know how it would work.
Mm-hmm.
And so releasing the needing to know how was an important piece of saying yes to that whole thing.
Yes, yes. Yes, it is that leap of faith that takes us to a whole new level.
And that's difficult for me in particular. I know lots of other people as well are in this boat where you say, well, wait a minute, why would I just trust that gut instinct to the level that I might make an enormous decision like closing down your psychotherapy practice, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm somewhat analytical with an engineering background and management background and consulting background, working with businesses, and you know, especially in that particular field, you need to see the numbers. Let's see the data. What's the database decisions? I mean, I had taught that for years. I had used that for years. And so I think my intuition has wanted to jump out, if you will, mm-hmm. and strengthen itself. But mm-hmm. until the last year or so, I probably kept it pretty quiet. Now, mm-hmm. there are certainly those instances when I shifted from corporate America to go completely independent. I think there was a lot of intuitive saying, you've been wanting to do this a long time. Now is mm-hmm. the time. Do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but
right.
anyway, yeah, it's a pretty powerful thing. And the program that you spoke about a minute ago about what you and Jack have created, I'm going to throw in a quick testimonial.
I'm
one of your guinea pigs, if you will, and you know, I'm honored that we went through the you know your material and you coached us through it over the course of a number of weeks, and it is powerful. It is really good, solid, helpful, and complete.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know it's not out completely in the marketplace yet, but I'm using it and like it and really am grateful that I had the opportunity to have you hold my hand and take me through it. I've mm-hmm. certainly learned a lot, not only about the process, but about myself while doing that.
Mm. Thanks. Thank you very much, Pete. And I will mention that something that is already out on the marketplace is my book.
Yeah.
That does have a guided visualization CD with it. So that it is a book that is process-oriented, so it actually takes you through your own process.
Can you tell us all the name of the book and how to get it?
Yes, you can get it through Amazon. You can get it through my website, which is www.innermagician.com, I-N-N-E-R, magician, M-A-G-I-C-I-A-N.com. It's one of those funny words people sometimes misspell.
Right.
And you can order it through any bookstore as well.
Great. Thank you for that. We're going to shift to talk about a little bit more deeply, less about your story, more about intuition. And for those of you who may have joined late, we're talking with Deb Sandella, Dr. Deb Sandella. And you are on the i-saga.net weekly guest interview. And you know, let's talk a little bit about you know your book, Releasing Our Inner Magician, and what exactly do you mean by releasing the inner magician?
You know, it's an interesting story. That title actually came to me in a very magical way. I had a different title in mind.
Mm.
And as I opened to intuition, this title came to me through the computer. I never would have used anything related to magician as a psychotherapist. That was my history, my background.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I received it, I needed to figure out what is the inner magician because I
right.
didn't really know. And what was so amazing for me is what it did is it took me out of the realm of just the psyche and just feelings because that's the realm I had been working in with psychotherapy.
Mm, okay.
And it caused me to expand my vision and my work to include something much bigger having to do with the spirit of the person, the spirit of the oneness that we're all connected in. So it really took me to look at that which can seem very magical, and we don't really understand how it works,
right?
And yet we're learning how to use it. Even though we don't, it's kind of like electricity. I have no idea how electricity works. None. I have no engineering background. And yet I love to use electricity to be able to accomplish the things that I want.
Right.
And so that's how intuition is. We don't really understand how it works, but we can still use it for our own benefit.
That's a nice analogy. Because if you can harness the power of electricity to turn on lights and to turn on your computer and to entertain yourself with TV or music or whatever, and beyond, I mean, you can power things that add benefit to the world, then why not? You know, go through
right.
it and learn to use it, learn to harness it. then...
Right, right. You don't have to understand how to do it.
Yeah.
There are people that will be working on that, and eventually someday we'll probably understand, because the all of the new neuroscience is revealing more and more about the powers that we have that are beyond our human understanding in the past.
Right.
Keep expanding that with quantum physics, looking at what seems invisible to us, to our, you know, our human eye, that actually shows that we're really all connected at that very deep atomic level.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Yes, it is.
So
it is very interesting.
From a definition standpoint, we've talked about intuition, but is there a textbook definition that would be helpful for us? You know, what is it, and then really, how do we use this mysterious thing to our benefit?
Right. You know, the formal definition of intuition is to have a knowing that is completely unrelated to logic or to understanding. It's like there's just an instant knowing, and so there's no reason for that knowing. We have no idea why we know or where the thought is coming from, but it just is there. So that, again, it's like having that electricity be there without having any understanding of how it got its way into my home. I have no idea how it's connected to that switch, but I do know that when I turn the switch that I get something.
Mm-hmm.
So that intuition itself lives in that space between thoughts. So that when we are in our logical thinking mind, we have lots of thoughts. And when we're worried, we get lots of chatter, you know. That little voice that is constantly, you know, like, oh, my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. Is this right? Am I, oh, my goodness, is this going to happen? I mean, it's that constant chatter. And so when we have that constant chatter, we're unable to hear intuition.
Right.
It's like it overlays intuition. So it's kind of like placing a call to your intuition center and asking a question and then staying on the line so that there's a busy signal and your intuition can't ever get a hold of you. You're not listening. So that in order to be able to hear intuition, we must create a dipping down into the quiet space between our thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really quieting that chatter, quieting our thoughts so that we can dip down into that still place within us that already knows. So it's really amazing when I work with clients doing room sessions privately, I am just always in awe of the wisdom that shows up when we dip down in there. That was totally out of their awareness of their conscious human mind, and yet when we slow down and dip down into that place to tap what's really there within people, it is so amazingly wise and knowing that we're both in awe,
right?
The client and I both. So it's quite an amazing resource that we are each born with, really regardless of our education, regardless of how successful we are. What I've learned in my experiences with clients is that everyone has it, and it's just a matter of dipping down into it.
So
and so the more that we can create that quiet time in our within us, the more that we access it. Now, when I say quiet time, I don't necessarily mean that you have to be still, like your body still. So, for instance, people who dance or who run or walk, that sometimes is a kind of meditation that stills the mind and creates that bigger space so we can hear intuition.
You know, I'm really glad to hear you say that. And now I'm reflecting back, and, you know, I've been a runner for years, and there's a lot of quieting the mind, if you will. I mean, there's really, I always refer to it as productive thought.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe what you would rephrase that and say it's, you know, not thought, but something else that then directs you to have ideas. But ideas for me, you know, while running or while on an airplane, a lot of airplane rides where, you know, there you are, you're in your little seat, sometimes very little seats, and you may or may not have your computer battery any longer, or it's not in your bag, and so you're not on your, you're not busy on your computer, and you may or may not be busy with you know, reading or trying to work on something that requires desk space, because you have a, you know, maybe this little 12 by 8 inch tray to work on, and that's it. So a lot of times what I do is I've got an a notebook, and I open up to an empty page, and that's where ideas just start coming, and I start taking notes, and some of the idea for this ISOCA, the Institute of Success and Goal Achievement, was born on a trip.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the idea popped in, and I started playing with it, and then I got a little bit more to build on and to build on and to build on. So I don't know if you would say that was, Pete being, it's not like I was thinking really hard and then created this thing. As you pointed out, I probably was thinking very little, and then the idea showed up. I said, I got to capture that.
Right, exactly. I think the word you used was popped in.
Yeah.
And that's really, what happens is it pops in, and you kind of listen and you think, who said that? Where'd that come from?
Right.
Thought that popped in. It's funny because when we're not paying attention, sometimes intuition will come in the middle of the night. It'll wake us up because that's the only time we're allowing ourselves to be quiet.
Right.
Or in a dream. Because when we're in dream, that's pure intuitive mind. You're really in the unconscious. There's no conscious mind during a dream. When you bring the dream into, the next morning, then you bring it into consciousness. And so that really is the process in the REM sessions that I do and that I teach others how to guide. We really take the process of dipping down into that wellspring of intuition that is down in between thoughts, and then we bring it back out into conscious awareness. So at that point, it's like the thinking or the intellectual mind is the operating system that allows us to use the data that has been retrieved.
Interesting analogy again. And I want to make sure that people are hearing you correctly. So when you say the RIM method, that's capital R, capital I, capital M for releasing the inner magician?
Yes, that's correct.
Perfect.
That is correct.
Now, I know we've talked about meditation and visualization and guided visualizations as a way to dip down into that quiet space between our thoughts. And until this past year, because I have started meditating and I do it fairly regularly now, but before that, it didn't seem like it was for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just curious, how do you... You said we all have this innate ability, but most of us haven't learned to tap into it. And now that I'm learning to tap into it, I'm like, holy cow, this is
<It's big. laughs>
what an amazing, incredible advantage or secret weapon or whatever you want to describe it, but it's extremely powerful.
Yes.
What can you tell people who might have the initial point of view that says, you know what, I'm not somebody who would meditate. That's for somebody to sit on top of a mountain.
Right.
Or whatever. What's your advice, or what can you say there?
Well, I think that there is that kind of assumption that meditation has been in the past associated with sitting on top of the mountain, for hours in stillness. And the reality is that is probably not the style of meditation that the majority of people will find easiest.
Right.
And so... So the style, again, it's almost like the operating system is unimportant. There are many paths to find that still point within the self. For instance, my husband is an outdoorsman. So he goes and he climbs mountains, or he runs, or he takes a walk in the outdoors, even in wintertime. And that connects him with that part of himself that allows him to sense. What we're really doing is we're sensing within us that we really are more than our bodies, that we have a spirit that extends beyond our bodies and that can receive information that is beyond our human sensing, it's that sixth sense, if you want to call it that, and that we actually can create the space for that to expand. And when that does expand, it is a profound experience. It's a very meaningful personal experience. So that once you start engaging in connecting with that inner space, then you realize how powerful that you really are. And as you said, it's almost like wow. It's really indescribable, and that's why it's hard to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
One way that a lot of people learn to meditate is to utilize resources like the project I'm doing with Jack, or my book project, the CD on my book, because all you have to do is put the CD in and then just listen.
Right. I am certainly that way, and maybe it will change over time, but for now, and I've got it on my iPod. It's a lot
mm-hmm.
smaller and easier to carry. But
right. Yeah, iPods are great.
You know, so I use something that's recorded already for me, the way that you've done,
uh-huh.
and then it's listening and following along, almost subconsciously, because you're kind of in that state.
Exactly. It does take you into an altered state
mm-hmm.
Where you're more open to that space between thoughts. So what happens is the conscious thinking really softens, and you move and dip down into what we might call like the void, which is between two thoughts, that space between two thoughts.
Right.
And so, sometimes it is all happening at that invisible level. I think you talked, Pete, about how you would do a visualization and you weren't even having a conscious awareness of it during the visualization. And then when you sat down afterwards and you began to write about it, all of the insights and the wisdom showed up.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and there are times when something clearly pops in, but
mm-hmm.
there are many times that nothing seems to pop in. And if I stopped and said, oh, okay, well, that was I did my 20 minutes today, check, off the list, yes, meditated today, check, and didn't do anything more, then I might not realize that I actually got anything out of it.
Uh-huh.
But when you do the exercise and you come out and then say, and then you pull out the journal and write down, you know, any thoughts that are suddenly in your mind as a result, that's where, boom, suddenly there's pages of information.
Right, exactly. That's exactly so that when we dip down in there, what happens is we really are working at the unconscious level, so it's out of awareness. So what happens is we learn what is the little, it's almost like, do you remember the story of the princess and the pea?
Sure.
That beneath all these many layers of mattresses, there was this one little tiny pea, and the true princess would feel it. Well, it's like that we can have down in our intuitive mind or our unconscious, we can have one little experience that is irritating us and creating less than perfect performance, but we have no idea that pea is down there. All we feel is the irritation
mm-hmm.
or the frustration. And so with this process, the REM process, we can actually dip down in very easily and see what that is and remove the pee. So, for instance, there was a man that I was working with who said, you know, every time I get really close to fulfilling my goals, it's like I lose steam. I'll be going along and I'm doing great and I'm really committed to this intention of what I want to create, and I've been doing a very good job of it, and then all of a sudden it's becoming, looking like it's doable, and I lose steam, and I start to fall away with my staying with it.
Right.
And so we went in to his intuitive mind and asked his intuition to dip down in and bring out an image of the very first time that this happened, kind of the source that created that. And so what he saw was himself as an 11-year-old playing a game of basketball, and the coach kept criticizing him, and that with every criticism that the coach made, it was like he felt more and more dejected.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of that game, he walked out of the gym feeling absolutely like a failure. So we identified this was the P that was down there. So now we can actually, what we know from the new neuroscience, we can actually go in and change that image that has been imprinted in the nervous system
mm-hmm.
and put in a new image to replace it. And so he went in and redid that memory so that he used the coach's feedback in a way to help him make positive change rather than feeling more and more dejected.
Right.
And so, I saw him about 6 months later, and I said, so what happened? How's it been? And he goes, I have never had that feeling again.
Right.
And I'm feeling so good. I'm being more successful because I don't have that old drag. So it's we have so much power within us to change our history, to attract that what we really want. It's very exciting.
That is exciting. And I think what you just described about, you know, this particular person's almost sabotaging in some way, subconsciously
yes.
maybe, but mm-hmm. when they're really close to their goals, I think a lot of us tend to do that for one reason or another.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
your point is we may not know why we do it.
That's exactly. Frequently we don't know what the little pea is beneath the mattress is. And sometimes, just like this experience, it can be an innocuous event, not
mm-hmm.
something that you would have said, oh, yeah, that was traumatic. Or that you would even remember. But the unconscious mind, the intuitive mind, does know. And it can retrieve it. And just in the process of retrieving it and bringing it into consciousness, we can begin to deal with it, bringing our conscious power to work with it.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
It's very empowering.
Well, we've been talking about, you know, kind of what happens during meditation a little bit and, you know, somewhat about how it works. I'm curious now, how can you help us to know what do we have to do to tap into our intuition that will actually help us support achieving our goals or our purpose or whatever it is?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Intuition
well,
is
very, yeah, I think
it's
very,
just so powerful.
It is so powerful. It is
how
so,
do you
we
it?
Are so powerful when we realize it.
What do you do? How do you tap into it?
Well, one of the things that's very important is to begin to focus inward rather than outward. In our culture, we're very outwardly focused. We encourage a lot of research. We encourage a lot of competitiveness. Like, you know, the whole Survivor series is
right.
all about pursuing some goal, whether it happens to be a good goal for you or not. Whether this person happens to be a good match for you or not doesn't matter. It becomes a competition to seek a particular result. So that really discourages intuition.
Mm-hmm.
It overrides intuition. And so the very first step is to turn inward.
Mm-hmm.
And one way to turn inward that is very simple is to close your eyes. So even if you're standing there in a moment, like I had a friend call me one time. She said, I'm in the airport. My mother-in-law just had an accident, broke her foot. I'm trying to decide whether to go ahead and get on this plane to France to give this presentation or whether to cancel it and stay and support my husband, and I'm really stuck. I can't decide what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so just in that moment, I said, close your eyes. And now imagine, first of all, imagine yourself going ahead and flying. And I think it was actually, I don't remember where it was, someplace in Europe, flying to Europe and doing that and see what your intuition tells you. And then to imagine what it would look like if you stayed. And then it was very clear. She said, oh, I definitely am supposed to go because then I'll be refreshed, and when I come back, I can replace him, and he can take time off.
There you go.
And so if she stayed at the intellectual place of analysis, there was no right answer. It was like she was too much in anxiety to be able to really think well. But in a matter of moments, then the answer arrives. When my son was in college, he was trying to decide whether to join a fraternity or not, and he called me. And so over the phone, I said, ask him to, in his right hand, to ask his intuitive mind to bring up an image that represented joining a fraternity. And so I'm sure you could guess what showed up. A can of beer.
Mug,
that's
right?
Not a hard one. And in his left hand, to ask his intuition to bring up an image that represented not joining a fraternity. And what showed up over there, when I said this to a group one time, they said a can of beer. It actually wasn't that. It was homework with an A on it, because he was very academically oriented.
Uh-huh.
And then I asked him to slap his hands together in his mind, and there would be a puff of smoke, and when the puff of smoke cleared, there would be an image that would give him a clear answer of what was the right answer for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the smoke cleared, there was a stop sign. And so he knew that it was the best answer for him not to join.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know, you know, I didn't have any investment in whether he joined or not, but I was curious about the process, and so I kept checking in with him throughout the rest of his college career, like, was that the right decision? And it totally was, because it allowed him to actually attend all his fraternity parties and not just one.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's it was true. It was really tapping that part of him that knew him best.
That technique that you just described, I have not done that before. So the idea of, you know, you described your client who was stuck, should I travel or should I go take care of the family?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm often in that analytical place, at least historically, and you get stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And you beat yourself up over, you know, to the point that no matter which one you choose, it
right.
doesn't feel right.
Exactly.
And so how would you actually, is it as simple as you just described, to kind of hold an image in your mind representing your two choices?
Yes, it is that simple. It really is that simple, and that the more that we practice, like the more we're doing something that is a form of meditation for us, the more that we're tapping that stillness within us on a regular basis,
mm-hmm.
the more we develop a practice of listening, you know, between the thoughts, the more easily those images come forth.
Right.
Because we're able to dip down in there. We know that path down into that space between the thoughts, so we can go there at will when we want to. What happens is when you have that kind of experience, it's felt as personal truth. So it's not analysis anymore. It's actually felt as personal truth and a knowing. So then the guilt is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Because you really see how it is going to be valuable. I mean, you may not understand exactly what it's going to look like, but you have this feeling that this is valuable.
And the idea of letting go that you need to know anyway.
Exactly, exactly. And you just, I mean, it's the best you can do because you can't read the future. You don't know how it's going to be used. What happens is over time, and Jack talks about this, Jack Canfield, that over time as you experiment, you create evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So when you experiment and you do it and it works, it teaches the body and your intellectual mind to trust that process. So pretty soon you develop a bigger and bigger file of evidence that says, yes, trust that this is true, that in the end it will work out perfectly.
Right. Lots of great stories.
It is. Well, it's so much fun. It's so much fun. I was thinking about our talk, and I thought, you know, meditation is a bit like a self-cleaning oven. It works on the same kind of way that a self-cleaning oven does.
Mm-hmm.
That we have the facilities within our brain that if we give it the time of stillness, it automatically organizes and cleans up all of our thinking.
Wow.
And
I should use my oven and my self-cleaning feature on the oven as often as as we do this.
Right.
I'll have a clean oven and a clean mind.
There you go. And we know that from research. You know, that's been documented through years of research, that the value of meditation, and again, it doesn't have to be a sitting meditation, but
mm-hmm.
it's a quieting of the mind. It may be taking a daily walk. It may be taking an afternoon nap. You know, my mother knows nothing about meditation. She's like just turned 80. But in her life, when she came home from work, she would always lay down for maybe a half an hour, 45 minutes and rest before
mm-hmm.
she started the evening. And you should see my mother. She looks like she's 60 years old, even though she's 80.
Yeah.
And so what we know in the research is that regular quieting of the mind on a daily basis over a long period of time, in the research I think it was over 5 years, like people who meditated daily for 5 years or more, were actually had bodies that were 10 years younger than their biological age.
That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So every day for 5 years was that study?
Yes, 5 years. Mm-hmm. So it was a real practice. It wasn't a sporadic thing. It was a real practice. It became a way of life. Similarly, blood pressure goes down with regular meditation practice. Healing is accelerated. So
right.
There's lots of so many benefits, both physically and emotionally.
In a separate conversation, you've said that you do meditate every day. Is that true?
I do. I have ever since my trip to Australia. That was one of the things when we were in Australia. It was such a wonderful luxury. I had the time to meditate and journal every day.
Right.
And to play a whole lot. Because play is also takes us in between thoughts. So when we're really playing, we're not chatter. We don't have a lot of chatter.
Mm.
So there's a freeing of our mind from that worry when we're playing, when we're really engaged in play.
Well, I'm not there at the everyday level yet. And I think maybe there's this flawed belief that, man, am I so busy right now that I can't seem to fit it in. And I'd like you to share I don't remember if it was the Dalai Lama or Gandhi or somebody, but what they said they would do on their very, very busy days.
Right. Yes, it was Gandhi.
Okay.
Who said, oh, I have so much to do today. I must meditate 2 hours instead of one.
Right.
And I have to say that it has totally been true in my experience that when I stay with my practice of meditation, things resolve themselves more easily and more quickly.
Which is, you really need to take it on faith, but if you you do believe that, then I certainly ought to be meditating about 2 hours a day right now.
I know. Well, when you look at our country, you're probably not alone. Because we're very busy people. Very busy people. I think we're busier in my travels, and I don't know what your experience is, Pete, but I think in a lot of other countries, they do go at a little slower pace than we do.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and I had developed this sense that I need to be doing something right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I would carry a book with me or a notebook or something to write on, because if there was ever a minute where I had a little bit of downtime in between things,
mm-hmm.
I needed to fill it with something so that I had the sense I was productive.
Right. Yes. We've had this assumption, a belief in our culture that not doing, like being empty of doing, is languishing or indulgent or lazy. It's like there's that assumption, that kind of association. And so that has really interrupted people naturally creating what we would call meditative time,
right.
Contemplative time, reflection time. It has not been naturally valued within our culture, for instance, in the way that it is in indigenous cultures back in their, particularly in their earlier times when the vision quest was valued among the
right.
Native Americans, where that's really what it was all about, was connecting with the intuitive mind and
mm-hmm.
connecting with the divine, because that's where our connection with a greater power happens, is in that intuitive place. So that when you look at brainwaves and you look at the space between thoughts, in that space between thoughts is where we get peak experience, is where we access intuition, and it's also where we have spiritual experience
mm-hmm.
or mystical experience.
This is tremendous, and I have one eye on the clock.
Yes.
And but my sense is that we should go another minute or two. Let me be more honest. Maybe another five, and not just truncate this conversation, because I don't think that would be the right way to end it. So if you have another 5 minutes, I do.
Oh, yes, I'm fine. Thank you.
Perfect. So I think one thing that's important to really ask you about is, how would someone start? If someone says, wow, Deb, this is really interesting. I'm starting to understand or have the sense that this is a valuable thing to do, but they don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
How would you recommend they get going?
Well, I think the very easiest way is to get a CD.
Mm-hmm.
because it's really like having a teacher sitting at your side, or to take a class. There are meditation classes out there or intuition classes. I do give classes periodically and do private sessions where you could also schedule a session where you're personally guided. So I'm totally walking you into that experience.
And I have to, again, from a testimonial standpoint, going through those exercises with you was tremendous. And you have, first of all, a very soothing voice.
That just helps to put you
into the place where you need to be in the first place.
Uh-huh.
But having, you know, going through a meditative exercise, but then with some coaching type questions, suddenly you say, wow, I did get something out of that. And it wasn't a waste of 20 minutes where, mm-hmm. I sat there with my eyes closed. I might have fallen asleep, but I definitely didn't get any picture
mm-hmm.
pop in.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize afterwards, oh, wow, okay, I did get something out of that. It was pretty good.
Right. Yes. Yes, and so it's in that experience that then you know what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
I think it is very valuable to have some kind of guidance, whether it's a personal, one-on-one, or it's a CD, or it's a class.
Right.
I think all of those ways are very good places to start, because otherwise I think it's asking a lot to expect to be able just to do it on your
mm-hmm.
own. I think it's asking a lot, and then you might, sometimes people do that, and then they think it doesn't work, and they give up on it, and they've lost this rich resource within them. And so we really want to encourage that connection with that self. And so I kind of think of myself as a guide, almost like a scout, helping people find the path to their inner self, to their inner wisdom, to their true greater self. And then when they're there, they will have their own experience, and they will receive the answers. So I'm the scout that shows them the way, stands with them as they're receiving answers, helps them understand what those answers are, and then learns how to go in and out of that place. So it's like how to remember the path there so that you can go there on your own whenever you need to or want
right.
to.
That's very good. Now, I think we're so close that if there's time for maybe one more really interesting story,
mm-hmm.
let's slip that in, and then we'll close it out.
Okay, sure. Well, I would say that one story that came to mind was, and again, it's how these innocuous moments can get stuck in our unconscious, and we have no idea. And so I had a woman come in who was frustrated that she was having difficulty in relationships with men. She was in her early 30s and was really wanting a relationship. And when I guided her down into that place within herself, the place that really knows and has the answers, what showed up was this 5-second interaction with a boy in her class in sixth grade, where he came up to her and said, "You're ugly." And we all know, if we've been around sixth grade boys.
Oh, sure.
This is not anything unusual. And she had no idea this was stuck there. But what had happened is when he said that, she was at such a vulnerable place in her own identity that it stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So when we went back and she moved into that memory and began to redo it, what she learned was that he was doing it because he liked her, not because he thought she was ugly. He was just trying to get her attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden, there was this whole new sense of being able to be freed of some kind of little pee under the mattress that she was not attractive to men.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's now getting married.
Oh, great.
So it was very successful, and what is so amazing is we are so powerful that kind of work can be done in 5 minutes or 2 hours, but a whole piece of work is done in a REM session.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take a weekly contact.
Right. And then it's fixed.
And it's fixed. And there, people may choose to do more sessions because there's more experiences that come up.
Sure.
But that gets fixed.
That's a great story. I know that's one of, you know, hundreds.
There are many, which is so much fun to do this work because the realization that we have within us, whatever it is that we really need, we already have it.
Right.
And it's more of an uncovering of it. And I think that was what I needed. That was my big transformation for myself, is to move out of any perception that there's a brokenness or something really, you know, needs to be fixed. It really is an uncovering of the intuitive wholeness, the inherent wholeness that is already there, that has been so beautiful and so magnificent to discover and then to teach and to help people realize that.
Well, that's fantastic. Yeah.
So thank you so much, and I would love to just share, if I could, that my contact information.
Yes, I would like for you to do that, please. That was my next question to you.
Okay, great. Yes, that I do have private room sessions or my book. I have virtual workshops where people are on the phone as a group, and that was what Pete participated in, was a virtual workshop. And then I also have retreats and workshops that are in person where we meet at some lovely place and do intuitive work together. And so you can access my website at innermagician.com, or I have an 800 number, which is 888-788-0800.
Great. So innermagician.com.
Right. Yeah, and it's inner, I-N-N-E-R, and then magician, magician.com.
I'm glad you spelled that.
Yes, I know. It is one of those tricky ones. And you can also email me at drdeb@innermagician.com.
Perfect. drdeb@innermagician.com.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I enjoyed the time tremendously today. And I know that you have, you know, so much terrific insight. And every time I have a conversation, every single Friday, you know, there's, even if it's somebody I know personally, like you and I have met before, and you and I have worked together before, I still got a tremendous amount of new ideas, new things that I've scribbled down on my paper here from our call today.
Mm, great.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Good. Well, it was really fun for me too, Pete.
Great. Well, thank you, Deb. And thank you, everyone, for coming and joining us today. Again, this is Pete Winarski with the Institute of Success and Goal Achievement, www.i-saga.net. And please do go to the site, look at our blog, look at the other resources that are there, sign up for the newsletter, which comes every month, and thank you for being part of the community. Take care, everyone, and we'll talk to you next week.